Good morning, GameCat fans. Today's Thursday, March 5th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Let's get right to it. GameCat baseball last night won 4-1 over Charleston Southern. Charleston Southern came into the game 10-1. They're now 10-2. Gamecocks are 9-5. Lots of lineup shuffles. Not a lot. Same old story at the plate for the Gamecocks. Concerning. The good news is they got a good start out of Connor Ciccoli. Another good midweek start from him. And then they used Brandon Stone and Alex Valentin. Two, I guess, Stone's in the bullpen now and is kind of a long reliever. But he went 2 2/3 innings, Valentin 2 innings. Slammed the door on that one, won the game. Lots of lineup shuffles and I don't know. You know, we'll figure all that out. I'm sure JB will talk about it on Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show. Mike Morgan is in with him today. Carolina goes to 9-5. There's no game Friday. There's a doubleheader starting at 1 against Princeton Saturday at Founders Park, then 4:30. So we'll see how they do this weekend. Princeton's a pretty good team. They're 2-5, but they've won at NC State and at Duke, 15th in the RPI. And so the Gamecocks could get on a roll, I guess, but it's the same old at the plate. And until that changes, you're really skeptical about how this team's going to match up in the SEC. You know, another game where they got off to a decent start, but, you know, they're preventing themselves from getting the big inning by the way they do things. It's just, it's maddening. I mean, you've got a team that's a Big South team on its in a midweek game with its third guy, or you know, comes in, shuts them down, strikes out 4, doesn't allow but 2 hits and no runs. Stickway, Zach Stickway from them. They got a good team for sure, and you know, it's one of those things where you look back, you go, well, at least you didn't lose, and that's true. Silver lining, winning over everything. So there's that. Gamecock women will find out who they play in the tournament in Greenville today. They play at noon tomorrow. It's likely Kentucky. Kentucky won last night, 94, or yesterday, 94-64 against Arkansas. They play the Georgia Bulldogs today at 11 a.m. Eastern. And then the winner goes on to play the Gamecocks. So the Gamecocks play Kentucky. It'll be the second straight time, and they escaped by 4 points in Lexington. So that game gets tipped off on ESPN at noon from Greenville. G Vegas, the Bon Secours Wellness Arena. So hopefully those guys or gals make a run, win another title. That's it's always good to win, right? You know, we've been talking so much about men's sports. I think there's some folks, very small minority of people on X, when we sent out the tweet about the record in men's sports, kind of almost wanted to make it a women's sports thing and say, yeah, I saw, well, thankfully I support women's sports. And I'm like, well, we do too. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of focusing on a problem, you know? I mean, we probably talk more softball on our shows than any other outlet, you know. I mean, we don't, there's no, you know, they're the women's sports at this institution are elite. They're very good. And that's something to be proud of for sure. I'm an all of the above type of person, you know, winning everything. But, you know, to sit there and say it's going to be okay because women's sports are good means that it's disingenuous. Probably dishonest to say that this fan base doesn't care about men's basketball, football, and baseball. And all of these things can be true. You can support all the sports. I mean, I didn't get that, but it was just a couple of people, you know. Some people just can't let it go. You know what I'm saying? Speaking of softball, tomorrow night at 6, the Texas Longhorns, ranked 3rd in the country, make their first trip to Beckham Field as members of the Southeastern Conference. You know, Texas in every sport gets people's blood boiling. They're kind of the, you know, the rich folks in the league now. And game 2 is on Saturday at 3 on SEC Network Plus. And then Sunday's on the SEC Network at noon from Beckham Field, South Carolina, and Texas. Ashley Chastain Woodard and her team get rolling. So with no baseball on Friday night, you're going to make your way out to Beckham Field. Please do that. Sad news yesterday, and this has been sort of expected, but Coach Lou Holtz has passed away at the age of 89 at his home in Orlando, surrounded by his family and people that love him. And Gamecock Nation certainly loves Lou Holtz. Just take you back. The 1999, I'll take you back further. In the 80s, I was a young lad growing up in Spartanburg. Tony Rice in 1988 was the quarterback at Notre Dame. He was from Woodruff. Woodruff, shout out to my buddy Roger, who's in our chat box and listens to our show. He's a Woodruff Wolverine, home of Willie Varner, the legendary coach, and just a nice, great community. Well, being from kind of the Lyman, Duncan, Welford area, it's close to Woodruff. In fact, in Reedville, where I lived at high school, they didn't have a postal service. So my zip code was actually Woodruff, South Carolina, 29388. And some of my friends that still live out in that area have Woodruff postal. But so it's close. So, but anyway, growing up there, dad and I, my father and I knew Tony Rice was from Spartanburg, and he always used to talk about Notre Dame and Lou Holtz. And he always used to say, son, the only coach that can ever turn Carolina around is Lou Holtz. Lots of respect for him. Well, my dad passed away in 1995. And lo and behold, 1998, Mike McGee got it done after being turned down a couple of times. Interesting enough, Frank Beamer was in the mix for that job. I look back on that and I don't know how realistic it was. Clemson was open at the same time. They hired Tommy Bowden because the Gamecocks fired Brad Scott. Clemson fired Tommy West at the same time. Clemson in 98, Clemson went 3-8. The Gamecocks went 1-10. Clemson won the football game. It's actually at that game. It was actually a pretty fun Clemson Carolina game to go to because everybody was kind of like, oh, well, whatever. But, and so they went. Tommy Bowden was the hottest young football coach in America. He was at Tulane at the time. Rich Rodriguez was his OC. They ended up getting Tommy Bowden. Tommy Bowden, I think, took some advice from his dad and said, you want to get in the ACC and not the SEC. But Frank Beamer was his name. But looking back on it, I remember at the time, even to the point where I was thinking, had Lou not taken the job, maybe Frank Beamer would have been the coach. But man, Frank Beamer had Michael Vick coming back. Shane was going to be a senior long snapper on that 99 team for Virginia Tech played for the national championship. So I don't know. I've never gotten any kind of answer on that. I just remember thinking at the time and as a through the years, I've never really checked into it. But it was an interesting coaching search. And Lou took the job finally. And he came and great press conference on the 50-yard line, Williams-Brice Stadium, said the goal was win the national championship. Of course, they never did that. The 0-11 year was terrible. But then he turned it around like he did everywhere else. The 2000 season was a pretty significant. My life changed that year, not just because the Gamecocks started winning, but it's amazing sometimes how in this Gamecock journey we're all on, you remember that, how your life sometimes parallels what's happening on the field, at least for me, and I'm not saying that those things that happen in my life, good or bad, are equal with Gamecock football. You got to put it in perspective. It's a little more important to me because it's a job now too. But and I'm fortunate that I get to do this with a team I've loved my whole life. It's a blessing. But it does parallel sometimes in our minds. But the day before they snapped the 21 game losing streak to New Mexico State, beginning of the 2000. People thought New Mexico State, they were actually pretty good. It had kind of a resurgent year the year before. People thought they were going to win the game. And they didn't. The Gamecocks won 31-0. Everybody tore down the goalpost. And I met my first wife then that weekend. And next weekend, met her parents before Georgia. That would be my family for a while. You move on in life, things happen, but that was significant. That season for me was significant. Going to the Outback Bowl and watching Ryan Brewer run all over Ohio State, sitting there in Raymond James Stadium. My buddy got us some good seats. We unfortunately, there was no Uber back then, obviously. There was not a cab to be had from Ybor City back to this hotel. Our buddy, way out, our buddy booked us in for some reason. I wish we'd have stayed, still to this day, wish we'd have stayed in Clearwater. But so we can get a taxi and some game cafe. And we were about to walk, and the neighborhoods we were about to walk to in Tampa outside of Ybor City, I don't know. I haven't looked at a map in a while, but it could have been dangerous. We were just kids, you know. We were 20, 21, something like that. But some Gamecock fans actually gave us a lift back, and I've always been thankful for that. I don't remember who they are. But they took us back. Gosh, that season, too. That season as well, my buddy and I, first time I'd ever been to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. We Friday night got off work, drove through the night to Tuscaloosa. I think we're around Alabaster. I'm not Alabaster, but Anniston, kind of outside of Birmingham. Spent, you know, stopped, got some sleep. Rolled over to Alabama, tailgated for a while, watched that whole game from the end zone. It was a loss, one of the toughest losses that year. Alabama was 3-8. My man Eric Kimry was starting that game. And then, of course, I was at Memorial Stadium for the push-off game. That was there were some tears shed, not by me, but everybody else around me for that football game. Gamecocks had it won, and, you know, it is what it is. That game will live in rivalry lore. But Lou turned it around, and that season, that 2000 season, always will have wonderful memories for me and that whole era. And now later in life, you know, I've gotten to know people that played during that era, like Eric Kimry, who's a blessing to everyone he meets, and my friend John Strickland, who was close with Coach Holtz and who comes on our show and who I've gotten to know in the past couple of years, who's a fantastic human being. You know, Ryan Brewer is a guy that I've met a couple of times. I don't know him as well, but, you know, he knows Mike Morgan and everyone else and has sponsored some of our shows. I mean, with Ryan Brewer Fence, I mean, just – there's so many players from that era. You know, Nashawn Goddard, who played for Spurrier his last year, but he was a recruit from Holtz, who's in coaching. Cedric Williams, who just got a job at Charleston Southern, who I've known that guy for years. You know, Chris Hampton, who's the defensive coordinator at Oregon now. He was recruited to South Carolina by Holtz. You know, it was a holdover for Spurrier. The great Savelle Newton, you know, who he was recruited by Holtz. It's just, I mean, Fran Person, who works in politics, was a Holtz recruit out of Pennsylvania. There's too many to list. Preston Thorne, who's on our show. I mean, and I was, those guys are kind of in my age range. So I know a lot of them personally and professionally now. And there's just a lot of good people associated with that era. It didn't end pretty, but Coach Spurrier took over afterward and away we go. I'll just always remember Lou as far as the inspiration that he provided for people. I can relate. He's a guy that kind of came from nothing. Small town on the West Virginia, Ohio border. I've driven through there. You know, it's kind of funny that Lou Holtz, Nick Saban, Jimbo, all these coaches have come from West Virginia. It's kind of a interesting coaching cradle. But, you know, he's a guy that East Liverpool, Ohio, right across the river or whatever, I think is where he grew up, but went to Kent State like Nick Saban, but, you know, sort of rose to prominence. And he was, his story, for those that don't know, he was coaching under Marvin Bass at South Carolina. Now, Marvin Bass coached Dan Reeves, another Gamecock great that's unfortunately passed, at South Carolina, and Bass got fired, and Holtz was an young assistant there, and that's where, according to his book, he wrote down all of his goals in life. Here's what I'd like to do. Everything from I'd like to visit these places, I'd like to be on Johnny Carson And he checked them all off his list. And the roots of that were when he and Beth were unemployed and in Columbia, South Carolina. I think that's part of what drew him back to the job, you know. And then he stayed for six seasons and, you know, went out with a winning record. It was unfortunate, the fight at the end that kept him out of a bowl, but he got it back to a winning record and bowed out. But, you know, so the roots of his journey, you know, were kind of planted in Columbia. And then that's where he ended his coaching career and went on TV. Always such a good ambassador for the South Carolina program. You know, always knew, you know, Notre Dame was where his heart was. That's where he won a national championship. Spent a long time in his coaching career. Notre Dame loves Lou Holtz and embraces him. But, you know, South Carolina, Arkansas, Minnesota for a couple of years, NC State, William and Mary, maybe not so much the New York Jets, but, you know, everybody embraced Lou Holtz and what he was. And, you know, I looking at it, you know, he had been in hospice care for a few weeks and was with his family at his house in Orlando. His wife passed away a few years back. So, you know, he gets to be reunited with her and all that good stuff. But make no mistake about it, the Lou Holtz era was the start of an elevation of the South Carolina football program. I'm not saying that if they'd hired someone else that they couldn't have done the same thing, but he was such a big name, and it was such a big hire. And you know, I think Spurrier may have still taken the job. I don't know. They may not have been open. I mean, had Lou Holtz was thinking about retiring after 2001 when they won went 9-3 and won the Outback Bowl for the second straight time. But he stayed and stayed three more years, and then the timing, you know, synced up for Spurrier to go. Coaching so much about timing and who's available. So in that instance, you know, yeah, they wouldn't have gotten Spurrier had it not been for Holtz because the timing may not have worked. And so, you know, South Carolina ended up getting Steve Spurrier and second straight big name coach. And that set the program on a path of elevation, you know, where bowl games were expected. And it wasn't this great year because they got to the Independence Bowl, right? And it's remained the standards of, regardless of what's happened, the overall standards and trajectory and where the program's at now has remained. And so I think that Gamecock Nation, you know, is all thankful for what Lou Holtz did at South Carolina. Like I said, wasn't always perfect there. Well, that Clemson game in 2003 wasn't pretty, and he didn't do all that well against Clemson. But Spurrier changed that, right? And but it's sad, you know. But it's also something that I think we can all embrace. He lived a long, happy life. He met all of those goals he wrote down in Columbia years ago, and he's reunited with his beloved wife on this day. So, you know, RIP, rest in peace, rest easy, rest in power. You know, everything everybody says to Coach Lou Holtz meant a lot. That era meant a lot to me personally, and still does that to this day, and to all Gamecocks out there. So that was that. So that, and then Jamie Bradford's got a video, a commemorative video. He does really well with those things. You can get that on our YouTube or X account now, but you can also check it out on the morning show coming up at 10. And Mike Morgan worked with Lou when Mike was working for the University of South Carolina and interviewed him many times, and he's got many stories as well. So be sure to check that out as we remember Lou Holtz on this day. On the flip side of things, back to 2026, and I'm gonna say more about this on the show. It's Smorgasbord Day, by the way, but before the smorgasbord. So there's a clip from practice, because yesterday was first spring practice, of Randy Clements doing a drill. And in chapter 125 of People Are Stupid, apparently some of the offensive line gurus out there, not coaches, they're private trainers or YouTubers. There was one dude, I was like, man, that coached the Ohio State club football team. So apparently, Ohio State has a football team that's just open to the student body. And this guy's the O-line coach for the intramural squad. As an offensive line coach, so they trashed this drill. And I was like, this is the dumbest thing I think I've ever. These people are bored. And look, if you don't like the drill, I don't have a problem with it. Do you know how many drills there are out there in coaching? You know how many times you can ask a coach what drill they like? And if you ask 10 coaches, five of them will tell you why it's the worst drill in the world, and five of them will tell you why it's absolutely necessary. And probably and there's no correlation between success and the drills, right? The specific drills you run. There's none. Zero. Okay. It's all theory. Okay. Nobody's right. Nobody's wrong. One of these jokers, who's a YouTuber of all things, says he tells it like it is. Takes this 15-second clip, not only trashes Randy Clements for it, but also goes into this greater diatribe about, greater, bashing of offensive line development. Now, look. Offensive line development, that's something to think about. Now, I have my theory about that. I don't think it lies in the freaking drills you're doing, And then the guy that started it is kind of a legend, this offensive line guru that actually has helped a lot of players individually. But, like I've said, they're all NFL oriented too, by the way. But as I've said many times, going way back to the Muschamp era. The purpose of a college football program, especially now that everybody's getting paid, okay? Especially now, the purpose of a college football program, while it is important to develop your players and get them ready for the next level, I'm not saying that's not, but fundamentally, your job's to win football games as a team. You can't put developing individuals like you're at some workout place in Dallas, Texas. Over the good of the team, right? So whatever drills you decide to do, even if it's not necessarily, helping this guy train for the combine, which there's no football at the combine, or whatever the hell they do, it doesn't matter, So first, so point A, you get all kinds of different opinions about drills from coaches. In fact, folks like Cole Kublik. And LaCharles Bentley and several other people that who's have a brain defended it on X yesterday. And second, even if that doesn't help, it's not their job to do that. It's their job to get them ready. And Randy Clements, to his credit on X, said, "Hey coaches, make sure your drills translate to real life," or something along those lines. And he put a drill up, and then he put a play at Baylor up, which is an awesome run play. If Carolina runs that, I'd be happy. Looked nothing like last year. And so there you go. So he brought some receipts. I'm happy that Coach Clements did that. But then beyond that, okay, so and within the draft gurus. And by the way, here's what I'm noticing about some of these NFL draft people. Most of them, look, you got a long way to go to be Todd McShay or Mel Kiper or, the three or four that are really good in that business, the rest, whatever. But nevertheless, the independent draft gurus, what they're doing is poor Lenore Sellers, good luck, Lenore, blah, 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 blah. And I kind of look back on it. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. These guys, when they hired Kendall Briles, just trashed it. Well, he's not going to develop for the NFL, blah, 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 blah. Again, what did I just say about the NFL and development? And quite frankly, after Dowell Loggins and Mike Shula, Lenore Sellers has gotten all the NFL coaching he needs. Okay? Right? And you saw what happened on the field. Okay? Lenore Sellers, more than anything, needs success on the football field. And it's so hypocritical and stupid to say that. And again, I'll bring this up. Oh, well, who are some of the better quarterbacks in the NFL? And what was their offensive system in college? the option, the air raid. I mean, what's the problem? Because RG3 didn't work out. You're gonna just put all Bryles quarterbacks suck. Well, come on, man. I mean, look, and then beyond, and so the draft people have this agenda, and I bet I will be willing to bet the minute Lenore Sellers has a bad play or even a good play, they're gonna pick it apart and tell you why that's not good for his draft status. Bull honky hockey. It's proven that nobody cares in the front offices what system you play in. None. Zero. Zero. None. None. So anyway, that's that part of it. And then on top of everything else, it's a 15-second clip from the first spring practice. I'll tell you a story. Last year, there's a report out there after the first spring practice that D tackle was in the weakest spot on the defense. I'll never forget this day on the Big Spur. And just people panicked and flipped. Did that end up being the case, even though the D tackles lost their coach, a good one during the year, and had to rebuild? No. There were some games, Monkel Goodwin and Nick Barrett were, I mean, Alabama comes to mind. They're outstanding. That wasn't this big weak link. Sure as heck was better than the offensive line. So there's no context in any of it. And I've probably spoken too long about it. It's unbelievable, some of these people these days. And I don't mind any, look, you want to go out there and be an independent NFL guru or yammer away as an ex-player on SiriusXM and act like you know everything about the NFL and all that. I have no problem with it. None. But when you sit there and take a 15-second clip of a practice from a college and there's a drill, and I don't care if you played offensive line in the NFL or not. You bring no, when you take a 15-second clip and you trash it and act like that's an applicable reality to success or failure on a football field, then, I have to question, whether or not you understood what you were doing when you were playing. I mean, the intelligence level of some of these people, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Does that mean South Carolina's going to have a good offensive line this year? No. Does that mean that, the drill, if you kind of polled 100 coaches, that 90% of them would say it's a good drill? No, it doesn't. Like I said, there's different opinions about different things. But to sit there and take that and then trash everything, I think it's very intellectually dishonest and sad. And I hope none of you kind of bought into it. Just focus on the outcome. If you had full practice tape and they didn't look very good, that's it. And then I saw somebody, these guys are all out of shape. They're not in pads. That's how they look out of pads. They're offensive linemen, not Adonises. Most of them have dropped weight. I actually think saw a picture of Shedd Surratt. I actually think he looks pretty good. He's leaned up. Demola's leaned up. That kind of thing. So anyway, that was pretty fun last night on X. It's like, my goodness, he had a lot going on. Lou Holtz died, passes away. You had the baseball game, which is just like scraping your nails down a chalkboard, watching them at bat. And then the idiots that run the Instagram accounts, which drive me crazy because people read those and just believe it's news, and it's not the reader's fault. It's present, and all he did was take three tweets. None of the people that back, numerous people like LaCharles Bentley and Cole Kublik, that backed up Randy Clements. They took the three tweets from the biggest morons, and just plastered it, getting blasted. Like that's news, dude. What are we doing? What are we doing? I understand. I look at shorts and reels, and I like short form content, but to make that into applicable news about an entire sport, or even if it's just a one team or a coach, that's just borderline insanity. And it's dumb. So anyway, I spent too much time on that. Oh, a reminder. I said this on the show yesterday, folks, about Josiah Thompson and the injury. The South Carolina coaching staff has known that he's not going to play. I just want to clarify this. Has known he is not going to play in 2026 since before they started being active in the portal. First of all, he was in the portal for a while, but he is not someone. So I think because of the timing of the news, you know, everybody thought, well, it comes right on top. Even people put this out. Like, I think Brad Crawford put it out. Oh, this comes on top of the peak injury. No, it doesn't, because this has been known. And so just to kind of reiterate, speaking of Randy Clements and personnel and all that at Carolina, the bottom line is this. They've planned for him not being there already. And so the solution to that loss is already been baked into the cake. It wasn't like, oh, first we lost Peak and now we've lost our other guy that could be a left tackle. You know, before, and I knew he had to have surgery. I didn't know if it was just a missed spring. And you know, I was like, oh, well, everybody will panic, but then it'll be back. But I didn't know it was season ending, in fairness. But the coaching staff did, and they've known about it for a while. And when he was in the portal, they just didn't count on him being there. So logically, when you look at it, you know, the coaching staff's already replaced him in theory, right, for 2026. Whether or not they were successful in doing that, that's, again, to be determined. But don't listen to the narrative out there that, oh, well, they've already, this is the, it's piling up, right, on them. Because that's more of the media and everyone else, all of us out here, knowing the full picture. More so than inside the program, where they've already prepared for it. It's been known for months, and they acted accordingly. So there you go. So Peak, Peak's a different story. They still feel confident he will be back. I'm thinking best case Mississippi State, maybe sooner. I'm fine with me if he gets back. He's really good. But Josiah Thompson is not like on top of that. This was known before they got Peak. So just to clarify that. Okay, just real quick, spring practice opened yesterday. A couple of guys, and it's the eyeball test, right? And I'm not being hypocritical here. I'm not predicting glory for any of these guys, just like I'm not predicting doom based on a single drill or one practice in shorts. But two players that were mentioned to me that looked good physically. One's freshman defensive tackle Aiden Harris. We've been kind of hinting around, thinking, you know, he's a high floor guy. He's out of Charlotte, big time recruit, you know, top 100 guy or whatever. Looks really good. Like, so as we thought, listed 6'2", 284. Big muscular guy, naturally strong on the inside. I think he's going to compete. I'm not saying he's getting in the rotation, but I think he will compete for playing time. And Travion Robertson obviously is going to get him going. And then Justin Okoronkwo looks a little lighter and leaner. I don't know that he was a player that I looked at last year and said, well, he needs to slim down. But he looks like he's really been working hard in the weight room and leaned up. And, you know, his whole thing is his speed and collision ability at linebacker. You know, he and Fred Johnson both need to obviously, you know, work on being consistent and instincts and all that. With the linebacker, Sean Murphy looks good physically. Murph's kind of showing some leadership. You know, he's the older guy out there. I think he was on a video, but it was told to me Sean Murphy's a guy to look out for when we're talking about the leadership. And, you know, the key with leadership is you got to be a good player and you got to be playing. And I think, again, I think he did down the stretch last year. Was he perfect? No. But compared to the first half of the year and, you know, kind of what we were told about Alabama and Florida State, you know, he's one that the Gamecocks have elevated. And so I thought that was encouraging. And then – Just another freshman that really, really looked good. And I want to correct my opinion here, change my opinion here. When I was talking about Julian Walker needing to fill out, I think obviously there was a time that he did, but I also said that his dad's a strength coach, so probably has a plan at home to get that done. Well, I'm not worried about that anymore. The guy's listed 6'6", 250. He looks every bit of it. And so you combine what he did when he kind of had a he was sl more slightly built in high school with now the size, as long as he's can adapt to the speed, the strength should come. Yeah, I think Julian Walker probably will play this year. And they've been thinking he would. And it's good for him with some of the, there's a lot of injuries and guys that are limited at edge. So working with Deion Barnes and getting those critical reps all spring will be good for him. So there's some little practice tidbits. So cornucopia of thoughts today. I ran the gamut on coffee. Going to get back into it on the show. Going to ask Alex Jones about it on the Gamecock Smorgasbord. We've got a VHS dates this afternoon for him. They finally made one, so we'll have him evaluate that. And this has been Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Hope you all have a wonderful Thursday. We'll see you on the show. Holla.